the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, the middle of the heat week, hump day, as it were. And Donovan's in the control room. Our phone lines are open, 800-259-9231. The webcam is running. The chat room is open. I'd like to say all systems are go, but that is not entirely true. Have you ever had, like, a bad hair day? Okay, I'm having a bad computer day, actually a bad computer week, and it reached the point where I feel I want to talk about it a little bit. Now, as you know, owing to an administrative oversight, we have one Vista computer here in the shop. It was actually, somebody went out and bought it, had Vista on it, couldn't stand it, couldn't back propagate to XP, and just said, here, you take it. If you don't take it, I'm throwing it in the trash, and we want to keep these things out of the landfill. So I had it, played with it enough to know I don't like Vista, so I assigned it the role of working as a recording system to record these shows that you are listening to right now, from which I will cut my demos. That's the only thing this Vista computer has to do. I don't have it doing anything else at all. So last night after the show, and I shut it down, and I see this little message. It's downloading updates from MicroBlorch. And sure enough, this morning I go to power it up, and it won't boot. And I've been twiddling with it all morning, and just prior to the show, I finally got it to spin up. You know, not that the universe would end if I missed recording one of my shows here, because 9 times out of 10, I just throw the recordings out anyway, as lacking any content of any wisdom or anything like that. It's just the idea of the time that I spent. And then it occurred to me, I've got all these other issues. I've got this printer from Hewlett-Packard that has this very clever sensor inside to determine if you are using the correct form of paper for the printer task at hand. And over the space of the last year, which is about how old this printer is now, this sensor has gone out of alignment to where it refuses to print any labels. It keeps insisting I've got the label stock in the tray upside down, which I don't. So I have to sacrifice a sheet of plain paper and the ink to print an extra set of labels before it gets to the real label stock. I have to trick this into doing its job. I also use this printer to print the checks from my business. And it is starting to reject the check stock as being... Well, it won't even say what's wrong. It just spits it out and goes to the next sheet of paper. So I have to print the checks one at a time now. And if it spits it out, I just have to feed it back into the tray until it finally agrees whatever it's thinking inside there to go ahead and print this thing. It's crud. And then to top it all off, insult to injury, this very simple, simple little computer utility that forms part of the production pipeline for what I do in my day job, just without any explanation at all, quit. Monday night, as a matter of fact, it was, which made me very unhappy, and I did terrible things to my hamster with a fork as a result. And had to go through and fix all of that and find out, and again, it was another security download that, you know, patch this and hose this, and I don't want to hear from the people who say I'm getting Mac and getting Linux, because I've got Linux, and Mac is now getting all these viruses and problems too, and they're having to go down this road into the security updates and stuff. But it occurred to me, and the whole point for this diatribe, and I know I've spent 4 minutes on it, I'm going to bring it to an end here. The whole point of my diatribe is, the reason the United States can no longer compete economically with the rest of the world is that American corporate leadership have been selling us tools which are crap, that fall apart, won't work, won't last. We are spending more time fixing our tools than we are getting productive work done that we could actually sell and make money with. And I think this is an area of serious concern because, frankly, the United States, and I'm going to piss off the Italians here, the United States is starting to remind me a very great deal of what Italy has become, where everything Italy makes is beautiful and looks great and is one and won't hold up. It's like when you buy a Ferrari, you almost have to adopt an auto mechanic. Or the old joke about what does Fiat stand for? Fix it again, Tony. And I remember when I was working in Italy and seeing all the stuff in the stores and how good it all looked, and yet how very shabbily it was all actually manufactured. And I remember buying some stuff when I was in Italy that didn't even last long enough to make the trip back to the United States. I mean, that's the... And here we are. And here we are. We're in this situation where we are being sold systems on which we depend our businesses that just will not hold up. And a big part of the problem is when the computer industry was just starting out, they went to the government and they lobbied for laws that indemnified them for product liability. And what this meant is that if you buy a van for your business and because of a design defect, the van crashes and you lose inventory or you lose business or whatever, you had the right to sue the maker of the van for the defective product that you bought. But in contrast, if you buy a computer or a piece of computer software for your business, and because of a design flaw, it crashes and you lose business, you suffer damages, you're not allowed to sue the computer makers. You've seen those little licenses when you break the shrink wrap, it says, you know, we don't guarantee this will even do what you think you bought it for, and in any event, it's not our problem if it eats your entire accounting system. And as a result, computer and software manufacturers have had no motivation whatsoever to create robust products. They're always out there adding new features. I saw a notice come through today, the 10 exciting new features in Office 2010. I don't want new features. I want the features I've already bought and paid for to work without giving me a lot of grief, because I've got real work to get out the door. I don't want to spend my entire life in upgrades and patches and so forth and so on. So I had to get that rant out of my system because, you know, I feel like that character in Fritz Lang's Metropolis, where my entire life is taking care of the machines. And I have no other reason for my existence other than fixing computers and stuff. And, yes, it's all under warranty. But, again, getting the warranty honored takes time out of our lives. And we're spending so much of our time fixing our tools rather than using them with which to earn a living. That's another reason the economy is in the Al-Qaeda, as it were. All right. Now, moving right along, we are waiting to hear anything from the parole board regarding Leonard Peltier. Nothing yet so far. It's been not quite 24 hours, so we're just almost to the halfway point when we were told that the recommendation. Donovan's in the control room and says, makes you long for the old-fashioned slide rule. I have a frame on my office wall. Or let me rephrase that. I had a frame on my office wall with a slide rule and a pad of paper and a pencil in there. And on the front was, in case of computer failure, break glass. And the reason it's not on the office wall anymore is we had a tour of young kids come through the shop to show them the animation facility. And one of them pointed to the slide rule and says, what's that thing? And at that point, I figured, okay, they don't get the joke, so we're taking that off there. So anyway, we're waiting to hear from the parole board on Leonard Peltier. We should hear sometime within the next day on the recommendation of the director of the parole board. And then, of course, the parole board has 3 weeks to either accept or reject the recommendation. So we're holding a happy thought on that. I think the deck is very much stacked against him because he is an embarrassment to the U.S. government. And the government can't afford any more embarrassments right now. Now, turning to the economy, speaking of embarrassments for the government here, analysts are now pointing out basically when you get through all of the special classifications and all the little funny bookkeeping and spin that the government does to make things look better than they really are, the real unemployment rate in the United States has hit a 68-year high. We are basically, the unemployment is worse now than at any other time since the end of the Great Depression. And it's still getting worse. And now Bernanke has come out and said the current economic crisis could be worse than the Great Depression. He said that 3 days ago. Now, what this basically means is that after trillions and trillions and I'm starting to sound like a latter-day Carl Sagan, trillions and trillions of dollars wafting off across the cosmos, or whatever. But after all this money, all of your money that has been poured onto Wall Street, and they're writing themselves $100 million bonuses. They're just happy as all heck. You know, it's just amazing. The money is flowing like manna from heaven. And after all this money has been poured onto Wall Street, for which you are being held responsible, without your permission, I might add, it's basically coming down to what I told you 6 months ago. They don't know how to fix the economy. They absolutely don't. We're going to take a break here. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, and we will be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We've got callers on the line. We're going to go to Joel in Wisconsin. Aloha, Joel. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Aloha, Michael. Hey,
aloha.
I'd like to pull a Paul Revere, if I may.
Okay.
JT Coyote of Prison Planet Forum moderator. He is under financial attack right now. It started in May with a bogus DEA raid, and just today, his wife was fired because she was rumor-mongering. The work he does is that important, I think, and everybody's recognizing that.
Okay, can we back up here a second? His wife was fired. Why?
It was a rumor being run around the office that somebody was drug raided, and they fingered her, and she was walked into the office, I guess, today, and just let go. And it wasn't her boss's fault. I guess this was an upper management type thing.
Okay, yeah, that's very, very sad to hear. I was reading about JT Coyote's situation with the drug raid. I mean, did they find anything, or it was just, my understanding was they kicked down the wrong door.
No, they kicked down the right door, but
yeah. The
thing was, the realtor agents thought they were going to score a quick asset forfeiture seizure, and the sheriff got served the papers, and he says, okay, but I'm going to have Mr. Coyote, well, his real name is Jack Travis, but
yes.
Have him come out, and nobody's drawing any weapons, nobody anything. Part of the problem was JT has a job reloading antique firearms, so there were lots of firearms, and what the realtors mistook as a methamphetamine lab was JT nailing brass ammunition. And if
he
would have broke down the door, it would have ended very tragically. We have pulled together and tried to support him. We even have a website for helping him out, which is patriotmoneybomb.com.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can throw a link to that, we would be eternally grateful. It's just a very long, sad story, and we really
don't have time. All right, I will definitely take a look at that. I understand what it is to lose your job to these to rumor mongering. I mean, I got chased out of Hollywood about 15 years ago when I started looking into the Vince Foster situation, and some of the stuff that was told about me was just absolutely bogus. And you'd think by now that common sense would tell you that anybody who has ever been double crossed or used or betrayed had it done to them by somebody they trusted. And so, you know, why you pass around these rumors, of course, some people are just very malicious. We know there's certainly a group within our own society that is going to spread bad rumors, even if they know they're completely false, because they see things as kind of a war. And I want to go back, though, to the bust here real quick. And I know we've got another caller waiting on the line. I'm going to get to you here in just a minute. But correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that the raid at Travis's home did not find anything illegal, no drugs or anything like that, is my understanding. Is that correct?
Absolutely not. They didn't find a thing.
Okay. Well, then why would the wife be fired over a raid which, if anything, proved that they were innocent of any wrongdoing?
It seems very strange. The director said that he just couldn't take any more heat from the issue and said he didn't want to deal with it. And that, you know, regretfully, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, well, I have a comment to that is, and that is that anybody who is under attack has a constitutional right to face their accuser. And this director, if he's feeling heat, who's he getting the heat from? Because that's the person this has to be taken to. What's the name of the company she was fired from? Maybe we need to put some heat on it in the other direction.
I don't know that personally.
All right, find
but
that
I do
for
know
me.
Because the action today, they are unable to re-get their loan financed. And part of the thing was Travis was very vocal about states' rights, even back as far as 1994. He basically started up the Colorado state rights movement, and that is why they are going after him so harsh.
Okay, well, let's put some public light on this situation here. And, Joel, I need you to do me a favor. I need you to find out the name of the company Travis's wife was working for, if possible, the name of that director. Let's get the Rangers all organized here and put some very powerful public spotlights on these people and see if they can squirm their way out of this one.
Will do. I'll rally the troops and we'll circle the wagons.
All right. We don't have to circle the wagons. That company, that director, they're the ones who have to circle the wagons. They're on the defensive. Ball's on our side of the court. Joel, thank you very much. I will take a look at the website and look into the situation, and thank you for taking care of our fellow patriots in their time of need. And we're going to switch over to Clarence in Oklahoma. Aloha, Clarence. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Osseo, Mike.
Osseo.
I was, I wanted to be kind of, that was such a somber call.
Yeah,
after
no
your
kidding.
Diatribe at the first, that's what I wanted to respond to.
Okay.
Because I busted, I've been busted a gut laughing when you talked about the little, because no one ever reads those agreements. Those computer, I never do.
They're a pain.
Very similar to that. We don't guarantee this will do what we say it does, and if it eats your accounting program, tough.
Yeah, that's literally what it says. It says, they own the software even on your machine. They can come in and do whatever they want at any time. And, of course, now that people are becoming aware of this, it's creating a bit of a backlash because Amazon is catching so much heat because of going into people's Kindles and erasing a book they had already bought and paid for. And, yes, their accounts were credited for the purchase price, but that's doesn't make it right. I think this woke up a lot of people, that the idea that their little electronic device is not theirs, that somebody in some corporation or somebody in some government authority can reach into your Kindle or presumably your iPhone or whatever and just loot the files and make sure you don't have anything nasty there and just delete things that they think you ought not to have. That to me is turning the democracy of the Internet into a definite fascist state.
Oh, that's for sure. One more quick item because I'm getting near the bottom break here. I liked your story about, because I barely know how to turn my computer on, send emails, and surf.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, my age and your age are probably about the same.
I'll deny that under oath, but go ahead.
Okay, and you'd be wise, too. What I was going to say is I like the little story you told about having the, because I remember the slide rules and all that, and the little plaque, with that and the pad and the pencil or whatever, in case of emergency, break this glass. I just had to tell this story because it brought back a memory. I was in the Air Force in the early 70s during the end of the Vietnam War. But I got sent to Germany, fortunately.
Okay, Clarence, you're going to have to hang on to that story. We hit the bottom of the hour. We'll pick up right where you left off as soon as we come back from these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here. You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go right back to Clarence in Oklahoma. Tell us your story.
Okay. just one quick vignette here. I've got an atomic clock here, and obviously there's a delay between where you are, and because it's about 2 minutes different than your time right there. Or whatever, so whatever that means. So it's hard for me to gauge.
Okay,
that's out of the way. Okay, well, when you talked about the little slide rule thing, I was stationed in southwestern Germany, a little place called Simbach Air Base. They named them after the local little bird, Simbach Village.
Mm-hmm.
And at the bowling alley, and I wish I'd bought this, but they had a gift shop. And in there, they had a 6-inch chrome-plated crescent wrench inlaid in a very ornate little oak box. it fit in, with glass over it. And there was a small plaque on top of it. And anyone who's ever been in the military will understand this. It was inscribed, in case of tight jaws, break this glass, memories of Simbach Air Base. I wish I'd bought that. It'd have been a great memento.
It sounds like it. It definitely sounds like it.
And I give away my age, tight jaws, that's, you know, when you get kind of torqued off, you know.
Yes, yes, I understand exactly what it means.
So, right,
Clarence, we're
going
to let you go here. We're going to have to let you go here because I got to get back to doing the things here. But I appreciate the call. And, yeah, that call about JT Coyote was definitely sobering. I'm trying to get directly in touch with him and get the skinny on what's going on here. But the idea... He, you know, in this day and age, for a family member to be fired because of a rumor of a drug raid that, in point of fact, found no evidence at all of drugs, you know, this kind of shunning. I want to know who put the pressure on the director of the company to fire the wife. You know, I want to know that. Okay. All right. So we're thank you very much for the phone call, Clarence. We're going to move right along here. Getting back to the economy, we kind of got a little pulled off the track here. According to the latest Gallup poll, the Federal Reserve now has a lower approval rating than the Internal Revenue Service, which strikes me as rather amazing. I mean, the two are very much linked and everything, but I you have to really work to be seen as more detrimental to the nation than the Internal Revenue Service. You know, absolutely. And even the Wall Street Journal is saying it is time to break up the Federal Reserve. And here's the bottom line, folks, and this is the point I wanted to get to for the whole show here. The Federal Reserve kind of system, where all the money in circulation is the result of a loan from this privately owned bank, is not the way this country was set up. I'm going to give you a little bit of history here. When Ben Franklin was appointed as ambassador from the American colonies to Britain before the War for Independence, and he went to Britain and he saw all the unemployment and poverty that was being inflicted on England by the Bank of England because of the same kind of usurious policies that has been the hallmark of Western-style banking in so many countries. And Franklin was asked, what do you do about the massive unemployment and poverty in the colonies? And Franklin says, we don't have any. Everybody's got a job. Everybody works. And the reason is because the government is printing up its own money. It's not having to borrow it from the Bank of England. We're just printing our own money, and it works for us. So in 1765, I believe it was, the Bank of England lobbied King George III to pass a law on the colonies saying they could no longer issue their own money. They had to go to the Bank of England for all currency, for all transactions in the colonies. And within 2 years, the colonies were hit with the same kind of massive poverty and unemployment that you were seeing in England at the same time. If you've ever read Charles Dickens, you know what the living conditions were like underneath the glorious blessings of the Bank of England. And then later on, of course, the same kind of squalor and poverty was the breeding ground for Jack the Ripper. So, you know, that was definitely an artifact of that economic system that was being imposed upon the people. Now, we always see in the history books about the Stamp Act and the tea tax and the abuses of the British soldiers against the population. But in reality, it was the impoverishment imposed by the Currency Act that really fueled popular anger against the British government and led to the American Revolution. And as a result, after the American Revolution, the Founding Fathers said, okay, we're going to learn from the mistakes of Great Britain. We are not going to do things the way they were done in the old world. This is our new world. Let's think outside the box. And so we had a Treasury Department set up by the United States government that had the legal authority to issue currency available for the public to use without paying interest on it. The government issued it. It was there for you to use in your commerce. It was based on silver and gold. It was written right into the Constitution that the United States was not supposed to use any debt-based credit instruments as money. It was supposed to be money based on something of worth. Could be silver, could be gold, could be copper. could be tantalum. It doesn't really matter what the metal is, as long as it is a value-based currency. That was what the Founding Fathers wanted. Twice before the Federal Reserve, bankers bribed politicians to set up central banks. Both times, their charters were revoked because the evils of that privately owned central bank issuing the public currency were manifest almost immediately. Andrew Jackson yanked the charter on the first one. There was an assassination attempt on his life, but both guns misfired, amazingly enough. So now we have the Federal Reserve that was voted through Congress without a quorum. Its legality is actually questionable. Congress can't waive the quorum rule. It exists there to make sure that Congress can't do something, you know, if there's only five people that show up. So Congress voted through the Federal Reserve Act over the Christmas break, 1913. It was signed into law by outgoing President Woodrow Wilson, who later wrote in his memoirs, "I have unwittingly destroyed my own country." And from that day to this, the Federal Reserve has, and its 12 member banks, most of whom are not even owned by Americans, have become rich and powerful, while the American people's real standard of living has been in a continuing state of decline. Now, what we need right now is we need a political leadership with the moral courage to return us to the constitutional monetary system that this country was started with. It is time to shut down the Federal Reserve. Now, Rasmussen is saying 75% of Americans favor auditing the Fed. I think we're past that. With all due apologies to Ron Paul and the wonderful job he's done in the House of Representatives, it is time to simply say the Federal Reserve has to go. It's not what was intended. It is not working to the advantage of the American people. And it's time to shut it down like we did its two predecessors. Now, Barack Obama's numbers are in an absolute free fall right now. If he wants to turn his poll numbers around without starting a world war, shutting down the Federal Reserve and reissuing currency by the U.S. government itself directly is the way to go. It's a wonderful opportunity to recover the economy. Abraham Lincoln did it with his greenbacks. John F. Kennedy did it with his U.S. notes. It is time for America to have a leader with the strength of will to say, we got to go back to the system that works for the people. We've had 100 years, almost, of a system that was designed by the bankers, for the bankers, and of the bankers. All right, they've got their money. Let's cut our losses and get back to a country where the economy is supposed to work for the people. Because if we don't do that, if we don't do this U-turn right now, this country is lost. We are mere months away from a new horrendous crash that is going to bring it all down. Maybe it's inevitable. This may be why we seem to see our politicians and our corporate leaders and our bankers just stuffing the money in their pockets as fast as they can and heading, getting ready to skedaddle for the border when it all comes apart. And if that's the case, if it's really coming down, you have only one choice left. You can either allow yourself to be driven into abject poverty, or you can decide not to throw good money after bad and say, I'm not going to pay for this anymore. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I just now put up the link to... to patriotmoneybomb.com. It's a fundraiser for JT Coyote. They're apparently on the verge of losing their home because of this most egregious firing of JT Coyote's wife from her job because of rumors regarding the drug bust or the drug raid. It wasn't a bust. It was a raid some months back where they basically broke into the home. They went in there and they didn't find anything. They did not find any drugs. There was no arrest. There was no charge. In other words, what the drug raid proved is there were no drugs. And so why this would be considered a negative? I am personally of the opinion that when we start pounding on this company that fired her, and, you know, let's boycott them right now. They want to know what pressure feels like. Rangers, we're going to show them. We are going to show them. It's if they had found drugs there, maybe I might understand this, but when they a patriot gets raided, the police fail to find anything whatsoever, and then somebody at her company says, well, we got to fire her anyway just because the raid didn't find anything, you know, that definitely is an economic attack. And this is a sore spot for me because I have been through this. My wife has been through this. We went through all of this back in Los Angeles 15 years ago. So we know what this feels like, and this angers me. And I hope it angers you. So we're going to be digging into this situation. That director's life, the director who fired this woman, his life is about to get very interesting, if I have anything to say about it whatsoever. So moving right along and getting back here to the economy. Man, I had so many things to talk about today. We'll have to save a lot of them for tomorrow. I want to end this segment talking real briefly, and I want you to think about this. Who is really responsible for the national debt? Because we are raised to believe that we have some say in the government affairs by virtue of the vote. But this huge, vast debt is being run up by a private bank that is not really part of the government. They like to pretend they are. They like to call themselves an agency of the U.S. government. They aren't. The Federal Reserve is a private bank. They're no more federal than Federal Express. It's a private bank that is able to print up enough money to bribe enough Congress critters to basically do whatever they feel like. But they are not a part of the government. And they were never intended to be under the Constitution of the United States of America. So, those of us alive today had nothing to say about the formation of the Federal Reserve and the passage of the Federal Reserve Act. We were not allowed to vote for it. We were not allowed to say whether we would agree or disagree to underwrite the ruinous interest that has been accumulating on the national debt over the last almost 100 years. We weren't alive at that time. We had nothing to say about it. Young people who are just this year finally old enough to vote are inheriting hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt that they have never had any say about whether they'll accept it or not. And when you take a human being and you say, you are responsible over the rest of your lifetime to work and earn $200,000 to give to the banks without any choice about it, that is at best indentured servitude. At worst, it's outright slavery. They can put all the fancy labels they want on it, but when you order humans to work and turn over their work product to some, you know, social elite person, that's serfdom, slavery, whatever you want to call it, that's exactly what it is. We are no longer a free people. We've been enslaved by our financial system. And it is time to start the revolution there. The Constitution does not allow a Federal Reserve. Its legality is in doubt because it was voted through Congress without a quorum. These banks have been dissolved before. It's time to do it again. Because we have watched over the last 6 months as these people in Wall Street and in the Federal Reserve are focusing all of their energies and machinations to drawing all the money back to themselves. And there is nothing left for we, the American people, to conduct business with. Even to, as JT Coyote is, can't even pay the bills anymore. We are being intentionally impoverished by a conspiracy between the bankers, the Federal Reserve, Wall Street, and the U.S. government. They're all happy. They're getting $100 million bonuses. They're getting pay raises. They're getting campaign donations. Nancy Pelosi's worth $500 million. They're all happy. It all works for them. It really does. And they want to drop all the debts on us. So I want to ask you a little question here. 6 months ago, 90% of you called the White House, called the Congress, and said, do not give our tax money to Wall Street. Congress did it anyway. So in that one act, Congress was not representing the will of the people, which is what is supposed to be meant by a representative government. Not just that we elect representatives, but that those representatives represent our will. They are not supposed to go to Washington, D.C. and just vote whatever is going to do their own pocketbook the best. They're supposed to go to Washington, D.C. to vote the will of their constituents. And when they fail to do that, we are in a situation of taxation without representation. Our aggregate tax rate for all American citizens averages about 50%. We work as hard for our masters as we do for ourselves, which is the same ratio of work for self, work for the masters, that the Roman slaves lived under, the antebellum slaves lived under, the medieval serfs lived under. We're there. We're living in a slave economy. We don't know it. They won't admit it. But that's exactly where we are right now. And it was done without our permission. And we're living under taxation without representation. And the school that I went to in New Hampshire taught me that taxation without representation is a just cause for firing the government, because that's what we did back in 1776. We got rid of a government that was taxing us into poverty and working in collusion with the Bank of England to reduce us into poverty and massive unemployment, so that labor could be gotten for the cheapest possible price. Call it the third worldization if you want. We've seen this pattern repeated over and over and over again anywhere the American corporations and banking systems get a foothold. Now they're doing it to us. And especially this idea that after these banking industries have taken so many billions and trillions of our tax dollars to get themselves through the credit default swap mess that they created for themselves, and then they turn around and they charge us higher interest on our credit cards, if they're not outright canceling the credit cards, they won't refinance anything. According to Dennis Kucinich, the Federal Reserve has got the system set up so much that banks make more money by refusing to loan to the American consumers than if they went out and loaned the money. Now, somebody in the chat room is saying that the goal here is to crash the economy so bad that we'll beg for the North American Union and the Amero or the new global currency. I don't think that is going to happen. I mean, that may be the plan. But right now, anybody with decent intelligence and awareness understands that globalism is what turned the U.S. economic crisis into a global calamity, and selling more globalism as the cure. People aren't going to go for that. People are very leery of this global government. I mean, global government, when I hear that word, that's what Hitler wanted, a global government with himself at the top. That's what Alexander the Great wanted. That's what Napoleon wanted. That's what every monomaniacal tyrant in history wanted, global government. To stand on top of a pyramid built to their own vanity and scream, I'm the king of the world. And with no other meaningful reason for wanting to do so. So I find myself very much in agreement with that 85% who responded to an online poll at whatreallyhappened.com saying it is time to shut the Federal Reserve down and just write off all those bad debts. The Federal Reserve has already made tons and tons and tons of money off of we the American people. It's time to cut it off. I never signed a contract pledging to work myself to death to make the private owners of the Federal Reserve wealthy beyond dreams of Midas. I don't think you did either. I dare anybody to show me a signed contract by the American people that says we will gladly work and sacrifice our lives to enrich the owners of the Federal Reserve. You're not going to find it out there. It is all by stealth and deception and swindle and snake oil. All righty, that's the end of our show today. I ran out of time. Thanks to everybody who called in. We'll be back tomorrow talking about all kinds of interesting stuff. We may have a guest. We've got a new show booker, and we're going to start getting more guests on the show here. So until tomorrow, stay safe, be well, drive carefully, be skeptical, be angry. Now's the time to get angry. Anger's a good thing in certain circumstances. So until tomorrow, aloha, America.